معكم أخوكم بالله باسل ناصر شوحة من مواطني سوريا.
On this overcast day in Damascus, we meet up with Basil Nasir Shuha, an official in Syria's Social Development Ministry, who provides us valuable insights into the crimes committed by the regime in Ghouta. The Arabic word Ghouta linguistically refers to a low-lying, fertile land that retains water and is rich in vegetation. Ghouta is an oasis that surrounds the city of Damascus. It is formed by the Barada River and its seven tributaries. The Ghouta of Damascus was the largest and most famous of the oases of the Orient. It was not only an agricultural area, but also had numerous other functions and had a strong historical, ecological, and cultural importance for the city of Damascus. The soils of Ghouta are characterized by high fertility. In addition to its function as an agricultural yield and ecological area, Ghouta played an important role as a scenic leisure and recreation area. Thus, after a hard day's work in the noisy city, people had a rest in the garden zone near the city in the evening and enjoyed the fresh climate in their private garden or in one of the numerous tea and coffee houses in the shade of the fruit trees. In the late 19th and 20th centuries, however, the Oasis Belt underwent significant changes due to the city's rapid growth. With new residential areas and infrastructure outside the city walls, the city spread further and further, mostly uncontrolled, into the surrounding area, pushing back the areas of the green Ghouta. In the 1980s, urban growth from Damascus started replacing agricultural use with housing and industry, shrinking the green zone.
قال ولي أبي داود عن أبي الدرداء أن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم قال فسطاط المسلمين يوم الملحمة بالغوطة إلى جانب مدينة يقال لها دمشق من خير مدائن الشام.
For Muslims, mention of Ghouta evokes much interest as the area has earned special mention in the Ahadith. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said that the place of assembly of the Muslims on the day of the great war that will take place towards the end of time will be in a place called Ghouta, in the vicinity of Damascus. The war in Syria since 2011 has seen Ghouta turn into a battlefield of poison gas attacks, sieges and conquests. Its inhabitants had been expelled, homes destroyed, and trees burned. Not much remains of the once paradisical gardens and flowering landscapes. Since early in the revolution, civilians in Eastern Ghouta almost entirely sided with the opposition to Syria's regime. Eastern Ghouta residents joined the protest against Bashar al-Assad and pitched in with the Syrian Mujahideen, successfully expelling Syrian government forces by November 2012. In February 2013, Syrian anti-government fighters captured parts of the ring road on the edge of Damascus and entered the adjoining Jobar district of the capital city. Backed by Hezbollah, the Assad army attacked and in May 2013 began a lengthy siege on eastern Ghouta. The siege has been called one of the longest in modern history and it saw its inhabitants bombed and denied food and medicine until its eventual capture by Bashar al-Assad's Russian-backed forces in 2018. Basil today tells us of the dire conditions residents of Ghouta endured during the long years of siege, with very limited water, food, and medication.
نتكلم قليلا عن الحصار في الغوطة الشرقية.
Said Lina, a mother from Ghouta, we used to make bread from barley, a small piece for each of us for the day. My children and the neighbor's children used to go to the landfill to look for something to eat among the garbage. Cut off from the rest of the country, the population of Eastern Ghouta even resorted to incineration of plastics to generate heat. Numerous war crime allegations were made during the battle, including the use of prohibited weapons, attacks on civilians, attacks against schools and hospitals, starvation as a method of warfare, and denial of medical evacuation. A June 2018 UN inquiry concluded that these amounted to crimes against humanity. The siege by the Syrian regime and Hezbollah left the enclave under a humanitarian crisis, leading to famine and a lack of food. According to a 2014 UN report, the denial of food as a military strategy began during July and August 2013. Eastern Ghouta's crops and farms were shelled and burnt. The report also alleged that Syrian forces blocked access roads and systematically confiscated food, fuel, and medicine at checkpoints. As Basil confirms, some inhabitants had to rely on tree leaves to survive. According to local hospital sources, approximately 18,000 residents of Ghouta were killed in the enclave from the start of the siege until October 2017. During the regime's 2018 offensive to take back Ghouta, on average, 71 people were being killed daily. The siege ended in 2018 with a deal that included illegal mass force transfer of much of the population of Ghouta to northern Syria. It should be understood that the horrors in Ghouta were not confined to destruction and death, but also the manner of death, as Basil explains.
في الشهر الثامن من 2013 شهر آب أغسطس قام النظام المجرم بضرب الغوطة الشرقية بغاز السارين السام.
In the early hours of the 21st of August 2013, the areas of Zamalka and Ain Tarma in eastern Ghouta came under attack from the regime. These rebel-controlled areas were struck by rockets containing the nerve agent sarin. Estimates of the death toll range up to 1,500 people. Basil, who volunteered as a paramedic, describes how at the time casualties began mounting, but there was widespread confusion as no apparent attack had taken place.
أبكي على شام الهوى بعيون مظلوم مناضل وأذوب في ساحاتها.
All we could see were people choking and convulsing, said Umm Yahya, a nurse from Ghouta. We did not understand what was happening. Someone came and told us to spray the injured with water. Then a doctor said we should give them atropine. It was only at dawn that the hospital staff realized the cause of the suffocation was a chemical weapon. Umm Yahya says she cannot forget the gasps coming out of the suffocating children, the foam coming out of their mouths, and the terrified look in their eyes. In the morning, the hospital floor was full of dead bodies. Later this day, we get the opportunity to visit Eastern Ghouta and see the reality of its destruction for ourselves. As we drive for kilometer after kilometer, all that meets the eye are nightmarish scenes of utter ruin. Entire neighborhoods are abandoned and bereft of life. Huge piles of debris are everywhere. We walk through the rubble of a bombed masjid. Its toppled minaret and mihrab, the only indication of sacredness of what stood here, one of thousands of masajid that were shattered by the unholy regime. Next, we get a first-hand view of the tunnels residents dug to be able to survive the bombardment during the years of siege. It is claimed that 70% of the enclave's population lived underground by November 2017 to escape bombardment. Footage released during the bombing showed residents living in squalor underground with urine and excrement on the floor and drinking water contaminated. Residents say each family was given a different part of the large network of tunnels to stay. Their accounts evoked a picture of micro-communities underground. The people were assigned various roles, including entertaining rowdy children, cleaning the floors, and securing food from above ground. These tunnels were also used for resistance purposes and smuggling food and water, and connected all parts of Ghouta over long distances.
الغوطة بطبيعة الحال هي شو بدي لك يعني منبع للشهادة ومنبع للسوار.
Whilst we make this discovery, it is the grace of Allah that a gentleman on his bicycle, one of the few residents of Jobar who still remain, passes us by. He indicates to us how he lived through all the events in Eastern Ghouta that we have been discovering. He remained in the area for the entire duration of the siege. I never left and will never leave, he says. He demonstrates to us how he personally participated in the digging of the survival tunnels in Ghouta, sometimes with his bare hands. A particularly poignant moment of our encounter is when this otherwise ordinary-looking laborer confides to us how two of his sons became martyrs in the war. I was also injured on my legs, he says. But he's not complaining. My only regret, he says, is that I was not honored with martyrdom too.
مو قضية إنه تأثرت لأني ما كسبت الشهادة بصراحة. صوبت ومتت وما كسبت الشهادة. والله ما بزل عليك إن شاء الله.
He praises the area of Jobar as one that was always a sword in the throat of the former regime. Despite the residents of the area being displaced and scattered, he is resolute that Eastern Ghouta will be rebuilt and be made better than it was before. As we bid farewell to this formidable man, and as droplets of rain begin falling around us, we read to him the hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam that extols the significance of Ghouta.
سيد يقول أنا مذكور في الحديث.
نعم.
أن الغوطة تكون فسطاط المسلمين يوم الملحمة.
يا عيني عينك. يا عيني عينك. أنا هذا الكلام كنت بدي أقوله بس والله راح عن بالي.
He smiles and affirms.
هذا حديث هذا عن الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم. صدق رسول الله. صدق
رسول. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has spoken the truth, he says. Nothing more apt could be said about the people of Jobar and wider Ghouta.